The Hollow Mountain. It had been made, like so much else on Terra, so far in the past that its origins are now little more than myth. Some held that the Emperor himself had laid the first stone. It was almost universally believed that he had designed it, drawing upon the plans that would one day connect its central chamber to the mechanisms of the Golden Throne itself. For many diligent adherents to the Imperial truth, this posed something of a theological conundrum. All were taught that the Emperor powered and controlled the Great Beacon that enabled his warships to ply the void. All were also taught that he did this from his throne, from where he also governed the lives of his people and engaged in eternal spiritual warfare against the ruinous powers of the Outer Dark. However, it was also taught in the Orthodox Ministorum schools that the Emperor had only retired to the throne after defeating the Devil Horus, from where he could be sustained for all time in the service of his people. Did that mean, at one time, the beacon had powered itself, or that the Emperor had been able to direct it while being free of the throne's confines? Or did it mean that the beacon had only come into existence once he had taken his eternal place on the throne? In which case, how had warp travel been maintained during the legendary days of the Great Crusade, when the Master of Mankind and his 9 Primarchs had walked amongst mortals? Entire learned theses had been written on the topic, attempting to prize open the relationship between the throne and the mountain, speculating endlessly over which had been raised first, and how they had been linked, and why both were now necessary in order to guide humanity's vessels through the living hell of the ether. Many of those scholars, striking near the truth of its functioning, had eventually gone missing, been censured or even burned as witches. It was most comforting to accept things in their broadest elements. The Astronomicon originated with the Emperor and was directed by him. By such means did he shine a light into the eternal darkness. It would go on forever, just as his reign would go on forever. The majority of those engaging in such work therefore knew nothing of the black ships that ran their long circuits through the lonely paths of the void. They knew nothing of the ancient harvest of the gifted, who had once been destined to form the vanguard of a new humanity, but were now fated to become something just a little more exalted than psychic firewood. They knew nothing of the month-long voyages in those creaking, heavily warded behemoths. They knew nothing of the null-souled guardians plucking the strange and the changed from their childhood homes. They knew nothing of the long journeys back home, assailed on all sides by madness within and without, until they came back to the Sol system at last, unmarked and unmonitored, to dock with the Stygian orbital facilities rotating silently. They knew nothing of the choices made by age-ravaged ancients, selecting those who might survive to prosper under the guidance of the Adeptus Astra Telepathica, to become the sole seers and seekers of dreams that the Imperium relied upon in order to communicate with itself. They did not know that a few select individuals amongst that harvest might be elevated to the highest echelons of all, the mysterious librarians of the Space Marines, or the sanctioned psychers of the Astra Militarum and the Inquisition itself, and that of those, many in turn would be selected for service within the Forbidden Fortress. So it was that the black-liveried landers would descend on prescribed nights, slipping out of orbit and down into the throne world's crowded skies. Once disembarked, the Chosen would file through the great arched gates, their heads shaved, their bodies stripped naked, and their names taken from them. They would be given new raiment, nightshade robes, controller collars, spinal implants and steel-ringed input nodes at the bases of their skulls. They would be instructed in the lore and the mysteries of their craft, and learn to control the beasts that coiled within their minds. Many would die during that training. Others would succumb to insanity and be turned over to the tech priests for servitor meat. For those who survived, a mind-altering journey of discovery awaited them, one denied to almost all other members of their species. They would learn the true nature of the ether. They would learn of the beings that dwelt within it. They would learn of the few ways that a mortal could employ its powers safely, and the many ways that a mortal could wreak destruction through hubris, malevolence, or error. They would write treatises on the philosophy of the Empyrean and compose music reflecting its shifting harmonics. They would be tested over and over again for signs of taint, sickness, or open-mindedness. They would be drilled in the worship of the Emperor, through whom all their gifts were made perfect. They would come to believe in time that annihilation in his service was the highest calling any mortal human could ever hope for. They would dream of it. They would long for it. And when the call finally came, they already knew the words they would sing endlessly, rapturously, as their eyelids burned away and their skin began to crisp. Such was the purpose of the mountain. No one now living save he who sat on the throne remembered how it had been conceived. The great sphere at its heart had surely been there from the very earliest phase of its life, carved out of the mountain of its enclosing peak to house the chamber of the Astronomicon. Perhaps once that had been enough. Perhaps the simple geometry of that construction had been all that was needed to angle and reflect the great beacon into the stars, maintaining the light the navigators cleaved to amid the worst of warp storms. It was not enough now. Over the long, desolate millennia, the first psionic amplifiers had been constructed under Martian direction, initially as a simple means of purifying and augmenting the signal, and then later as essential tools for arresting its degradation. More machinery had been bolted on, retrofitted and infiltrated into the earlier, more elegant designs. Additional psi conduits were laid down, each one larger than the last, to boost the signal from the distant Imperial Palace. The immense spikes around the original sphere that looked so much like mighty hab towers were in fact psionic machinery added to every year by armies of engine seers and psyker artisans. Their roots extended far below the fortress foundations, and their pinnacles now ascended higher still, until they were colossal fingers of resonant iron, reaching up, claw-like, to scrape the skies. As the new age of strife had arrived, and mankind's grip on its domains had faltered, the complex too had become bloated, run to fat, half derelict at its base, and semi-understood, even by its most senior occupants. The power drain required passed beyond all reason, such that a minor fluctuation in demand could wipe out the charge supply for a whole urban subsector. The build-up of psychic power in its major resonators was so enormous that the air hummed and crackled for 100 miles in every direction, causing sickness and tumors, and sending minds into turmoil. Whoever its original designers had been, they could surely never have foreseen the throughput of human souls now required to stoke that great psychic furnace. The years of discharge had worn away at the tottering foundations, clogging the fortress's creaking arteries, for now more than 100 souls were burned up every day, only to be replaced within the sphere by the steady shuffle of new blood brought in by the overworked and overextended black ships. So, the choir continued. The hymns continued. in defiance of the heavy grind of entropy and the weakness of mortal strength. The beacon still burned, threading together humanity's rotting empire of a million worlds.